hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Welcome to another Tech Lounge. I am still on the road, so I will keep this introduction fairly brief. This is another interview when I was also on the road from Web Summit back in November last year. I have three or four really good interviews. So either halfway through or three quarters through. I'm not sure. It doesn't really matter. This interview is with Dana Lawson, the CTO of Netlify. Netlify is a company who are not strangers to this podcast. They have been on various times in the company's career, mostly with one of the two founders, if my memory serves me correctly. It was a little while ago. Company has grown, has done very well, has become somewhat sort of synonymous with static site hosting and all sorts of other things. Jamstack, if that's still even really a thing, which is something we discuss in the interview. Of course, as with any interview that's on the floor of an event, a little bit of noise that I've done my best to clean up, but it's not always perfect. But do stick around. The interview is very interesting. So this is Dana Lawson, CTO at Netlify. Enjoy. Many of you might have heard of Descript because it's been around for a while, and it's probably one of the first tools to let you edit audio and video like text. You know, delete text, edit text, and the audio and the video update to reflect those changes. Getting rid of ums and ahs, mistakes, repetitions, etc., etc. Has a lot of other features which I also use on my podcast and videos, like interactive transcripts, AI voices, summaries, show notes, chapter markers, all sorts of things. So if you would like to give Descript a try too and get a discount on a paid plan and earn the show a little bit of money too, then head on over to go.christianchiller.com/Descript.
This is huge.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely one of the biggest events in Europe outside of something like IFA, which is more of a trade fair.
Yeah.
Or CES, which is also a trade fair. Probably one of them. I mean, South by Southwest maybe is bigger. I'm not sure.
Yeah, reInvent is this big. AWS reInvent, it is this big. It is, except it's a lot more, this is more like thought leadership and business minded versus like deep technical.
Yeah, I must admit, especially with the AI stuff, there's a tendency, because it tends to abstract so much, there's a bit of me that kind of misses just seeing like some cool technology, because everything gets kind of hidden beneath the surface so much. Like a couple of years ago when I'd come and see a lot of cloud native stuff, and I could actually look at code.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of walk in the halls and it's just like everything is just, I don't know, it's fine, but it's not as interesting to look at.
I know, I put code in my talk and then I, I looked at all their talks. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is why they put me on Thursday at 2:00, because it's so nerdy, because I have code examples.
Good, though. Did you keep them?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't.
Yesterday, sorry. Yeah,
it'll be later today. I mean, my laptop crashed. Hopefully they have my presentation loaded or a TED talk in it, so.
Well, that's the other problem with doing code. You have to kind of bring your own, well, depending what you mean by showing code, but
I know. I was at Lisbon AI conference last week, and that one was so. Yep. That one was cool.
Yeah, we ran a hackathon the weekend between.
Oh, y'all did? Okay. Yeah, that was a really good conference. They did a great job. I loved it.
There was quite a few people there who don't actually come for that. Or there was also a gaming event on.
Yeah, they had like a whole tech Lisbon AI Tech Week.
Cool.
It was pretty cool.
That might have been better to come for.
You should do it next year. It was full on practitioners, no slides, okay, demos good. Only. They were like, some people cheated in slides, and I was like, I had to do a demo only. I was like, this is nerve wracking.
There's a really good event in Berlin every month called Hack and Tell, where it's like 5 minute. It's in Seabase, which is one of the oldest hacker spaces in the world, and there's like no pitch decks, no slideshows.
That's right.
As much code as possible, show us a demo, and people get shouted at if they don't.
That's how this was. Like, some people cheated, but I took it. I was like, okay, demo only, let's do this. I hit a rate limit, like live. Somebody, I'm like, tweet them. I got my rate limit lifted via a tweet right before the presentation. It was crazy.
Which service were you connecting?
I was connecting to Linear.
But say if you got rate limited in your own service, that would be...
No, if it was my own service, I would have been like, ching, but I had to call it like Linear. I created an agent to go do all my Linear work because I hate doing it. And so it was. I ran it against all of our issues and it...
Your issues. Okay, that makes sense. All right. It's just your personal ones. It feels
I was like, we're about to do this live at Netlify. I was like, about to either make people happy or not happy.
What do you do? Because I've been trying to do something with, and this could all go in the interview. This is great.
Oh.
I've been trying to do something with Lydia to match it to community issues in GitHub.
Yep.
And I couldn't really find anything. And then I put it through another service to try and do text matching, and it's still... So I haven't really found a way to try and say, oh, we've got this internal issue, but I also want to see, has someone submitted something that matches it? And I seem to...
Come use my agent. It's on my repo.
Okay.
You'll need to update it a little bit, but what you do is you'll first take your GitHub issues, because we already have them, into Linear.
Okay.
And then...
So
the step one, just hook up your issues into Linear. And then you can take my agent, it's open source, and then my agent does duplication verification, and it's pretty good.
But how do you get them in? Because how do you get them into GitHub in the first place?
You could just connect them.
I swear I've done it several times, and it just keeps only doing pull request stuff, maybe.
No, you can do your issues.
I swear that's because that's what I'm looking for, because they get so many things that are duplicated.
Oh, same. We just slurp them in. We slurp in Zendesk.
Okay.
GitHub issues, and we put it all in Linear, and then I run my Linear agent to categorize duplicates. I don't have them delete because you never know, but it just links the duplicates, and then it gives
it does that fairly well itself,
a top level summary, and then the next step I have is we're hooking it into our AI agent, so then it can just go and do the change.
Yeah, there's a degree of that. I have a degree of actually wanting to have open source people contribute things because it keeps the community going, but contributing things you want.
I know. As a maintainer, I'd be like, just do the part I'm doing. The find the common issues, so at least you're not going through, especially very popular projects. It's a slog. I worked at GitHub. I know.
Yeah. All right. So, we're actually here talking about Netlify, strangely, which is, a lot of people's experience of Netlify is maybe one particular thing. We've been talking about a lot of other things. It's not the first time Netlify has been on the show, many times actually, over a fairly long period.
Yeah.
It's been a while. It was mostly with the names completely escaping me, with the Danish guys.
The Danish guys, yeah. Matt Billman, Christian Bach. Yeah. The company just hit their 10-year anniversary in March. So been around for a hot minute, not a new company.
No, it's actually kind of crazy. I feel like sometimes companies I've been using for a while, it must be older than 10 years, but I guess...
They're all starting to hit that age. Yeah. So, we're coming into 10, 15 years age on some of what we felt was really modern, new tech, new stacks. It ain't new no more.
Is Jamstack still a thing?
I would say no, but yes. I mean, it is what it is now. I mean, all architectures are becoming whatever. It's with the rise of agents, you got to ask yourself, can an agent talk to it? And does it matter,
Maybe. We'll see.
We'll see. I don't know. I'm a hard... I've been doing this a long time, so I'm with you.
Exactly. I think if you support all this stuff, it's great, but don't support only that stuff because it may not...
Oh, absolutely not. You got to be a skeptic. Come on, we're engineers. We're paid
As someone in another interview said, I can't remember. I think I spoke to someone from Tailscale.
Avery?
Yeah. And I think he said, basically everything is just an HTTP request, no matter... What you boil it down to?
It really is. I said it's just we're at machine speed instead of human speed, but it's still basically the same.
Yeah. So let's maybe just for very, very quickly zoom out to the kind of original and maybe general opinions of what most people think of Netlify.
Yeah.
Or if someone has never heard of it, what is Netlify in a broad strokes?
We're a web development platform that also does edge computing and hosting. So we make it easy to go from idea to the internet and just remove chores along the path. So, when Heroku came out, it was about building out your infrastructure on top of the abstractions of hyperscalers. Well, it's like if the internet's just a bunch of websites and applications, why make people use their cognitive load on that? And so we've just tried to continue to make it as easy as possible so that you can just hook up a repo, drop a file, and then we do all the heavy lifting from DNS, server provisioning, and then execution of workloads.
Yep.
And the company has sort of changed its positioning and offering over the 10 years for market demands, I suppose. But I suppose the interesting question to ask would be, in a lot of the spaces the company operates in, you do have a fair bit of big competition.
Yeah.
From things like static hosting to edge functions to a lot of the services you offer are offered by much bigger competitors that you've managed to keep going.
Yeah.
So how have you managed to keep remaining competitive? And probably, to be fair, you're running on some of the infrastructure of those competitors as well. So
it comes down to the experience that we provide and how people utilize the systems. You know, we're trying to simplify it and unify it, but also allow developers and creators to have choice. So we're not overly prescriptive about what frameworks you use, what actions you take. We want to be able to meet developers where they are. And you know how we are. We vote with our feet. Like, there's a developer hype cycle. And so we try to be reactive, but also thinking about that in this new way of how people will eventually use these systems. And so really just giving people freedom of choice, I think, is incredibly important. You know, keeping the premise of an open web. We don't want anybody to feel locked in, especially with the advancements of technology now. Like, if you go with one hyperscaler and hypervisor, like, you know, you're going to be paying them a lot of money for a long time. And I find that, like, people want the freedom of choice. And we're seeing that right now with the rise of these smaller platforms becoming unicorns overnight. Yeah. And it's really, I think, starting to disrupt some of the bigger tech, and they're trying to be reactive to it. And it's been the long game for Netlify. We've always said, like, hey, we want to be the glue of the ecosystem. Yeah. We want to continue to see how we can create good experiences and abstract those chores, no matter how you interconnect them. And so that's what we continue to do. And we're obsessed about making it easy, just continuing to not gatekeep. And right now, it's like incredible. It's like, you know, the whole premise was to really empower front-end developers to not have to go through the DevOps cycle of hell to make a change. And that's really where Jamstack was like, let's make the front-end headless so that you can just go and move on it. Because, you know, your security posture should be where the data lives and resides. And now that you have the citizen developers that are rising up, it's like, okay, how do you continue to give them a really good experience and also educate them? People are curious. People want to be able to do more than just be in a chat box. They want to be in a chat box, but they also want to have flexibility and boundaries. Site builders have been around forever. And there's a reason that site builders aren't the funnest, because it puts you in a little box. And now with agents, you're like, okay, the box is gone, but there's still a lot of unknowns.
I remember the heady days of Dreamweaver.
Dreamweaver. I was like, what is this?
My first ever job was with Macromedia Dreamweaver.
Oh, there you go. We've all been through it, man. I'm a terrible front-end developer. When Dreamweaver came out, I was like, thank God. Shoot. Tailwinds came out, I was like, yes, CSC, be damned, you know. And look at us now. It's like, agent, go make something look prettier. No, prettier.
I mean, but this is an interesting thing. Let's come back to that in 1 second. Just, obviously, your journey has been bigger than Netlify, and Netlify's journey has been bigger than your involvement with it. But maybe just looking at Netlify as a company, you've sort of transitioned through a fairly quick-moving era of constant changes from initially sort of being like a static site host, which was a novelty back then.
It was.
To, you talk about, you know, agentic hosting now. What maybe was one of the trends that did or didn't stick around that surprised you the most?
I don't know. I think static hosting is still really, like, I mean, it's still around. It still serves a purpose. I tell people, I'm like, you don't got to do some crazy dynamic with a simple site. Keep it simple. Mm. Don't go chase all the bells and whistles just because new modern frameworks allow you to have all the bells and whistles. Yep. So I'm actually surprised in some sense, but not surprised. I think what's even more interesting is, like, do frameworks matter as much anymore to the common developer, especially when they just do the job? And so that's been really interesting to see. But I think there's still a lot of innovation that's going to continue to happen on frameworks. I think local first is going to be, you know, if we want to get real nerdy, it's something that people will demand and desire because the experience is just so fast.
What do you mean? Do you mean in terms of, what do you mean by local first?
Local first browser logic, instead of getting it back into the server. So it's just really on client side. Okay. And so I see that continuing to be something that's more prevalent. But I don't know, man, like, the trends continue, they evolve. So, you know, we have our tech circles and people talk about all the same things. But I don't know. People said static hosting would be bad. Mike's not.
Oh, it's, I mean, I switched to static site generators from years in things like Drupal.
Oh, yeah, and Jekyll and Hugo.
Yeah,
and,
well, Jekyll, all the whole journey. My main site now is Astro, which is overkill, but I wanted to.
But you wanted to learn Astro.
Yeah. But I don't know, it compared to using a CMS, it doesn't really seem like there's anything better. And you just make HTML. And the beauty of it, like local first, is it doesn't really matter how bad my generation is. Because it's only me and a handful of build servers that ever really experienced it.
Exactly. I think CMS, that's an interesting concept too. It's like their CMSs have a lot of just, they can be cruddy. Like if you, they can just be a cruddy experience. Nobody wants to, I don't know, anybody likes to go into a CMS GUI and add stuff. Like, unless they've been doing it forever and they're like stuck with old workflows. But I think more and more I'm seeing applications that are using traditional databases and they're going full stack databases, even though it's in this like composable architecture. You see stuff like PlanetScale, Prisma, Supabase, come on now, Neon. And so CMSs, I'd be like, ooh, you know, databases are getting simpler.
Yeah, and can just be a bunch of markdown files.
That was a whole other side.
I've been going down a really strange path recently that starts to make me sound like I want to be using Linux, even though I'm not, of wanting all my personal kind of data, which is a bit of a vague term, to be a file per entity. So pulling out of things like Trello and Linear and using Obsidian Tasks.
Oh, yeah.
Pulling out of proprietary PDF annotation and just having PDFs that I annotate and just like folders of files, because then you can use that as the back end.
Exactly.
And just put whatever you like on the front without, and everything is compatible. I don't know. Yeah.
It makes it more organized at the end of the day instead of throwing it into you get to control it.
My content can be in an Obsidian Vault and in an Astro website because it's basically the same.
Exactly.
With a few bits of properties that each system is like, I don't know what this is, but it doesn't really matter.
And micro front ends, you know? Yeah. You, people are going to just be hooking up micro front ends instead of having one. It's like, okay, cool. And what data sources are you going to read from?
Yeah. But this is me. A lot of the world still seems to like to go down putting things in a bucket with no lid.
I know. It's like, you know what? All you need is an S3. I'm like, okay, that's going to be an expensive-ass S3 bucket. It's going to be a big back end. I mean, it depends on what you're doing again, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about the agentic side of things. I'd especially be interested to know from a hosting in sort of quote marks provider, I would imagine that there's a fair challenge in securing the traffic coming to and from, but also just managing, because it's not quite the same as a web page. You know, there's a lot of back and forth that has to be managed somehow as well. So what's the challenge been like with adapting to those workloads?
I mean, honestly, you know, bots have been around forever, but bots have like a pattern that is pretty matchable because they do stuff very stupidly. And really an agentic user is still just a bot, but it has a little bit of free will. And it mimics, if you just look at it, so much like what a human user would do on those sites. But you can still tell the difference between DOM scraping bots. And then I think the difficulty is like distinguishing agentic, like good, healthy traffic from human traffic, but treating them one as the same. I'm like, does it matter as long as it's healthy? I think the question comes into like the people that are creating the websites, you know, do you want this on there or not? And a lot of them, it's like, they don't care. They just want the SEO search to go up.
Yeah.
But for us, we're looking at things like signatures, hashes, firewall rules.
Do you mean in terms of agentic services accessing other people's sites? Okay.
So for us as a web host provider, you know, you'll get somebody where you have malicious bot traffic and you're like, wow, my bandwidth went up. And then it's like, or you're very popular. Yeah. And for us, it's just being ensure that we have smart, reliable systems that do a plethora of things on the back end. And so having dynamic firewall sets, giving that control back down to the user, because we can protect you from bad things, but you have to define what are the good things.
Yeah.
And especially as you have more agents that are just mining your sites, that may be good, maybe bad. That's on you to define. And so we're just trying to listen to our customer base, give them the power to be able to define those rule sets from a network level.
And from the other perspective, do you also now offer hosting of agents? Because you mentioned your own, I'm assuming you would host it with Netlify.
You know, soon to come. Okay. I mean, you know, we're looking at all those areas of how people are now creating and building these websites. And if agents are going to be the forefront of that, then we need to make a place where that you can host these agents. And so we already have paths for MPC servers. So now the next step is agent hosting. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure that we will do it.
But that will bring a whole other batch of challenges again on
traffic. Of course.
Traffic.
But I mean, you know, we've been around for 10 years. We have experts in this domain. I feel like we have the right technology and the right endpoints because we're totally a part of the whole CI/CD system. And so again, when you're starting from repo to the internet, we can interconnect all those data points. Okay. And we can do it in a safe way. And again, by that separation of back end to front end through defined paths.
Yeah. I'd be interested from the kind of more open source side of things. I think Netlify still offers open source plans for a lot of projects. Yeah. But are you still also creating some of your own? Because you used to have like Netlify CMS and a couple of other things and some stayed and some went. Is there still an overall, if we look at something of a competitor like Vercel, who also, you know, does some similar things, but also has a whole bunch of other sort of gateway tools into their ecosystem. Is that something that Netlify is maybe looking and getting back into, or is kind of happy where it is? Or?
I mean, you know, we really, again, we're not trying to build like one system to rule them all and say like, oh, this is the only framework that's compatible with us. We want to still continue to champion for an open web. It's like people are choosing TanStack, Vite, Astro, Remix. Like there's all these choices out there. Next, like let developers choose the right tool for the right job. And this is, again, why I think static hosting is still prevalent. Yeah. This is why, you know, how much do frameworks really matter? I don't know. They should all just work on the problem that you need. And so for us, we want to continue to open source the right bits that we think are interesting. But we're not trying to lock anybody into, even if it's an open source technology, to saying, like, this is the only path that works with Netlify. Because that's going to change, and it's going to be rapidly changing. And as these models have some free will behind them, especially foundational ones, they're going to go and say, okay, you're trying to build XYZ. It's going to pull whatever it thinks is the best versus having a vertical platform where it's like, okay, our cloud hosting provider only works with this one project because we maintain and govern it. No way, man. I don't want to be in that business. Tech is moving too fast. I come from GitHub. I believe that every day there's amazing humans creating amazing technology, and we should champion that continuation of sharing. Yeah. And so my job is really just connecting that ecosystem. But as we see interesting things, like I'm open sourcing all my little pet projects all day. And I think you have to continue to have that mindset. You participate in the community, you make it better, and then you listen to what they want and you react and respond.
Yeah.
But we don't have any desire to try to create a closed ecosystem, even on the premise of open source.
Yeah. Interesting. With what length does a provider have to go to, you know, when people are using these vibe coding platforms and you say, you know, give me this bit of infrastructure, that bit of infrastructure, host it, serve it, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of level of effort do you have to go to hope or ensure, or if you want, that when someone says, I want to host the output somewhere, that it will choose Netlify? This is something I've often wondered because I'm never sure how much is done as deals or how much is done as like, I'm just going to recommend this or...
I mean, the thing that we have going for is like we're 10 years on the internet and there's not a lot of providers that do what we do. We hope that it says it takes 280 impressions for models to be trained with what they want. And so we continue giving a good experience. We continue to market. We do have partnerships with agent. You know, we're white labeled on Bolt. When you go to Bolt, you know, you're deploying through Netlify and some other providers that we partner with. But again, it's like the models will choose what they want. But if you're doing the right thing, then people are going to choose you and it influences the models. And we've just continued to hopefully give a great experience. We have a lot of love, even though we may not be as visible as some of the bigger, larger brands. But we find that ChatGPT recommends Netlify over and over and over and over again. And we're like, all right, sweet. I think there is going to be continued gamification from larger companies to try and do that, especially as we understand how these things are influenced. But, you know, right now, you got to do a little bit of hope and dreams. And I think be product focused. You know, you can't control what you can't control.
I don't know if this is a question you can or want to answer, really. But I wonder with some of these that how much of the vibe coding ecosystem ends up turning into customers as opposed to just free users. You know, there's a little bit of a issue there of a lot of the traffic is not always good traffic in the long run, you know.
I mean, we've always had pretty gracious free allotments and a free offering, and we want continue to have like curious people. Like our job is not to be gatekeepers of it. It's like you want to get out there and vibe code with your site, great. Okay. But you know, it comes with limitations. We rolled out changes to our pricing. Okay. Recently we went from seat-based pricing, which I don't think is very fair in a lot of ways. I mean, it still serves its purpose because you still want roles and custom roles. So like, I'm not saying seats are bad, but it should be based on usage. It's like and so right now what you'll see is just like how the coding platforms are working. They're credit-based, token-based. We're mirroring that because we want people to pay for what they use and what they don't use.
Yeah, we're
seeing this conversion though of vibe coders that are turning this into real stuff.
Yeah.
Our NPS survey that we just put out is 50% identified developers and 50% other. And the other bucket runs the gamut from I'm a student, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a PM, I'm a designer, I'm a finance dude that hates spreadsheets and I'm going to vibe code myself out of it. We see it all. Yeah. And it's interesting to see the change in what people want from our traditional JavaScript developer cohort into these new developers that are coming in through these agents, because Netlify has the ability to drop and drag. You don't have to have a Git repo.
True. Yeah, that's something I think is not always as obvious as it was. I think it was one that was literally like the first release was drag and drop.
It's drag and drop, yeah. And people love it still, especially because Git has a learning curve. Like you take people and they're like, and then you have to ask yourself, well, do you need Git? I was talking with—
not just a learning curve, but also a lot of unstated patterns that people expect you to know, and they vary from team to team, and
everybody does it different. I mean, I was at GitHub, we had sticky notes for Git commands. I'm like, we work here. I was like, we're passing sticky notes. True story. But I think we got to ask ourselves is like, where's that obfuscation happening and what matters? And I was talking to the Cursor folks and they're like, a lot of people just aren't, you know, putting stuff in Git. And I'm like,
really? Coming back full circle to deploy it via FTP to production.
It kind of is, and that's where I think, like, you know, as practitioners, you have to, like, save your prompts in the CI. If you're not going to do it in Git, you have to find, you know, gold responses within your CI systems.
That's actually food for thought on some other completely unrelated to the interview things that I'm trying to remember to write down when we're done. But it's interesting about the pricing. I have definitely, as a Netlify user, hit the issue around seat-based pricing before when you were like two people.
Yeah.
And the cost does jump a fair bit for a minor increase in actual usage within the team or whatever. It's usually small companies.
It is.
So, okay. You mentioned maybe in passing one thing there, but what else is on the roadmap for the next 6 months or so that you can mention?
I mean, we're just really, again, thinking about those experiences. We just released Agent Runners, which allows you to, once you deploy, if you want to make a change, you can go into Netlify, say, change this piece on the website, choose which coding agent. You can run it against all three. It's going to give you a live preview of what the coding agent changed, and you can use Codex, Gemini, et cetera. We're continuing to add models. And then you as a marketer or whomever within that team, guess what? You can just be like pushed to main. Oh. And so it allows rapid iteration. I'm really excited about that because you don't have to go in and out, because post deploy, what are you going to do? You're going to go back into your IDE or you're going to sit there and be like, oh, I want to change this. And it's always been what we've wanted to do at Netlify is to empower the other personas on a team. Yeah.
You've often had some GUI elements.
You know, it's like, okay, how can we really have a marketer feel empowered, but also take the time to mark it down? It's like, well, the site's deployed. You don't like it? Go in there and say, hey, you know what? I want to change the words in this banner. You get a live preview, and it's not vaporware. If they said it's good, merge it. It's just a pull request. And then beyond that, we're thinking about more so for those bigger systems on how do we produce, you know, out-of-the-box specs without you having to define the specs. So you want to build an e-commerce site? Like, cool. Like, let us help you, like, you have the undercurrent infrastructure already set and forget. And it's something, you know, templates aren't a new thing, but I would say like having smart templates for the different use cases. Like you mentioned that you used Astro. Maybe you didn't need to do Astro, but you wanted to do it because you're curious. But in some places, they already have a whole bunch of sites. They've already determined that they're utilizing TanStack as their framework. They want to use that. So let's make it easy for the people to continue to create that pattern. And so we're just really, again, trying to meet developers and teams where they are. And we're thinking about how to make it easy for them to get the idea out into the world consistently, securely, with governance. Because you know you can do it quickly, but it's the last mile that's hard. Yeah. So trying to find the right ways that people can integrate things that they need within their sites. Yeah. You know, we've had an ecosystem of integrations for a long time. What if we made it easier just to have them used?
It's interesting because I feel like at several points in the company's history, you've tried to sort of replace the CMS experience for the non-coder, and with varying degrees of success because the technology didn't quite work or whatever. But yeah, there's a new potential. And again, will it be successful? We'll wait and see, I suppose. But
we'll have to see. And I think it's about experimenting, listening to people, and keeping your core principles in place. And the core principles are like, developers and custom builders shouldn't spend time doing chores.
You should be
spending time thinking about your experiences. Yeah. You should have some taste in there. You should be philosophizing about why your stuff is better than the rest, not what size of cache you have. Like, that should just be all done. That's been thought of. Like, time to first bite. Like, that's our job. Let's make it quick. Yeah. I want you to come up with the ideas that people get delight from, because that's what living's about. Is like having a great experience. It's for me, man.
I feel like there's some clever comeback from that, but maybe that's just a good place to stop instead.
There you go. You'll come up one and post at it. You'll be like, except for all the slop.
Well, and the job loss and the anyway. All right, thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.